The Victorian Ombudsman is calling for the use of solitary confinement to be abolished in the youth justice system. A review of the three of the state's prisons has found solitary confinement is often being used as the primary way to manage young detainees, in contravention of state law and Australia's international treaty obligations. It warns the practice is damaging young people rather than rehabilitating them. Deborah Glass is Victoria's Ombudsman and she joins us in our Melbourne studio. Welcome to Breakfast.
Thank you. Good morning, Geraldine.
Now, officially in Victoria, it goes under other names, doesn't it? Like isolation and seclusion. So how do you define solitary confinement?
Well, solitary confinement is actually defined in international rules, the Nelson Mandela rules, as being isolated for 22 hours or more a day without meaningful human contact. It doesn't officially exist as a term in Victoria, or indeed, as far as I know, anywhere in Australia.
How young are detainees being held in isolation then?
Well, we looked at three different facilities in Victoria. We looked at a secure welfare service, that's, 10 to 17-year-olds, youth justice, similar ages, of course it could be older. We also looked at an adult prison, which holds 18 to 24-year-olds. And bear in mind that an 18-year-old is technically an adult, but we're well aware, and there is a massive scientific evidence, that up until the age of 25, young people are still developing neurologically, socially, mentally, and so on.
What did you find at these three facilities?
Very, very different understanding of the danger of isolation practices. And to be clear, I mean, although solitary confinement doesn't exist in official parlance, the terms exist, isolation in youth justice, separation in prisons, seclusion in secure welfare, which have the potential to amount to solitary confinement. So not every instance of isolation is solitary confinement. You can keep somebody isolated for a few hours and that's fine, for good sound reasons. But it is, in fact, permitted, and I don't condemn that when it's used as a last resort for the minimum time necessary, and that in fact is what the law requires. What we found is that it wasn't being used as a last resort. It was in some places, particularly in prison, being used as the preferred behaviour management tool.
Why? When you came to decide, did this imply that they had run out of abilities to manage those people in any other way?
Well, one of the staff said to us, it's become the norm to separate first and sort it out later. So we found, for example, cases where victims and perpetrators within a prison were being separated for the same length of time. So the victim was being isolated just the same, sometimes for weeks, as the person who supposedly had assaulted him. We found people being isolated for concealing an antidepressant tablet. There were numerous instances of, particularly in prison, of practices that just seemed to be punitive or indeed highly questionable.
It sounds like a form of despair by the authorities, what you're just describing there, that they've run out of ability to believe they can influence the course of events better.
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, whether they've run out or they don't have any tools in the box or they're not trying hard enough, But each facility was different. I mean, when we looked at secure welfare, for example, which cares for 10 to 17-year-olds, they were genuinely using seclusion as a last resort. So there was a therapeutic ethos in place there. Now, compare that to Port Phillip Prison, where a similar form of challenging behaviour might result in isolation for days, weeks, and sometimes even months on end. So the why is this? I mean, there is a cultural issue here. That I think is a key consideration. In youth justice, the picture was more mixed. Some of the staff clearly had an understanding of the dangers of these practices, and others didn't. So it does depend on the awareness of staff of why it is damaging and dangerous to young people. It also depends on people having the requisite sort of tools, ability, training to respond to challenging behaviour in other ways.
Yes, in fact, in your report, you describe one young adult prisoner in Port Phillip who commented in this way: "Do you know how hard it is when the only person you've seen for the last 9 months was yourself in the mirror?" I mean, how long are people being kept in the seclusion?
Well, In the adult prison system, in some cases for months. And that amounts to prolonged solitary confinement under the Mandela Rules, which is prohibited in international human rights terms. So it's a pretty shoddy look for Australia that, you know, that this is happening in our facilities.
And I think you found that there was a particular emphasis, no, put it this way, there was a disproportionate number of young Indigenous prisoners had been kept like this, and that this was causing you particular concern.
It is a deeply distressing scenario. I mean, it is bad enough that we have a disproportionate number of Aboriginal young people in our child protection systems, in out-of-home care, certainly in youth justice and our prison system. But what we found in particular when we looked at the youth justice precinct was that young Aboriginal people were being kept in isolation at an even higher rate than others. And if we go back decades to the Royal Commission on Aboriginal Deaths in Custody, which acknowledges the extreme anxiety caused to Aboriginal prisoners when they're isolated. We really need to be worried about that.
Yes, and some of your observations are very interesting. In comparing the three facilities, we found a direct correlation between the use and length of isolation practices and the extent to which a facility recognised the harm caused by them. So you're really hinting there that there are some deep issues of lack of grasp that you're describing.
Absolutely. And we surveyed both staff and detainees in this process. This was the inspections carried out as close as possible to these, you know, new international treaty we've signed up to, OPCAT, which requires us to, you know, to really go deeply into the heart of the matter. So this thematic inspection was done under OPCAT's rigorous standards, which includes getting out there and talking to people. So when we spoke to staff and surveyed staff, we found very, very different views and understanding of the harm that these practices can cause. I mean, there were many, many people, particularly in the adult prison system, who simply didn't get it.
And I think your point too is that with young people and a real sense that their brains are not fully developed, at least till 25, that this has got the capacity to be much tougher than it might be for an adult, and that this is the sort of thing that isn't grasped, you think, that sort of understanding of youth psychology?
It is. It also, there is a lack of understanding of mental health, trauma-informed behavioural management. You know, these are all tools that should be in the box of our prison system, of youth justice, to deal with challenging behaviour. Because we know that young people, precisely because they're not fully formed, they will also act in ways that are more volatile, more irrational, more challenging than older adults.
Well, we sought a response from the States Minister for Youth Justice, Ben Carroll, and in a statement to us, the Minister says, "We make no apologies for making sure these facilities are as safe," before adding, "You can't rehabilitate young people in an unsafe environment. Do you accept maybe that solitary confinement or exclusion is a necessary tool to manage behaviour in any shape or form?"
I do accept that isolation practices may be necessary, and I've never suggested for a moment that practices themselves should be banned. I don't accept that solitary confinement is ever necessary. And I need to just specify there and to stress that means isolation for 22 hours a day or more without meaningful human contact. And it's that meaningful human contact, which could be with a prison worker, a social worker, a mental health specialist, or whoever. Now, none of that would go to the detriment of the safety or security of a prison.
Mm. It sounds like, you'll forgive me if I'm being sort of colloquial, but it's almost like a decision, we'll break these kids. You know, they'll just show that they've got to grasp that they're in a different environment and they can't dictate events. Did you find that sort of attitude?
Look, in some cases, you know, we had people who said, look, you know, we should do this more often. You know, this is, you know, the prisons are tough places. These are tough kids. Now, I absolutely accept that our prisons and youth justice facilities challenging and can at times be really dangerous places. And staff need tools in the box to deal with what can be very, very challenging behaviour. But this cannot be the only tool in the box. And we have to remember that these kids are all going to get out one day, every one of them. And we need to ask ourselves, this, you know, fundamentally, this is about community safety. How are we going to ensure that they come out of these facilities not more damaged than when they went in?
You've made 27 recommendations to the state government. What are the key ones that you would like to see implemented?
The key recommendations are around a legislative ban on solitary confinement. And I stress again, that doesn't mean a ban on isolation practices. But if our facilities are doing what they say they do and using isolation as a last resort and for a minimum time necessary, there should be no problem with a ban on this, you know, because it should actually be taken for granted that this does not happen. Sadly, at the moment, it does. The another key recommendation I've made is that there be a system-wide review of how young people are managed in the adult prison system. And in this case, I'm addressing this to the 18 to 24 cohort of young people who are in adult prisons, where we found the prison was particularly ill-equipped to deal with their challenging behaviour. And that's where we found these alarming instances of prolonged solitary confinement, where in effect it appeared to be the preferred tool. That's what they did. You know, they just separate them and don't think about any sort of therapeutic alternatives.
Look, thank you very much indeed for joining us.
My pleasure.
Deborah Glass, the Victoria Ombudsman.